really hard. I just tend to make a lot of mistakes, apparently. So, all right, if I can, my clicker gonna work this morning. There, got it moving too far. There we go. All right, so there was this gentleman. He didn't like to fly a whole lot anyway, but as he looked out the window at the storm that was raging that had delayed his first flight, you could understand his animosity and his anxiety coming about as far as taking this flight in just a little bit anyway. And so he's pacing back and forth through the terminal, just trying to wait for his next flight to come in and just trying to work off some of his anxiety. And he comes across a machine, a life insurance machine. And it was offering a $100,000 policy in case he happened to meet his demise on this flight for just $3. And he thought about his family at home, he thought about his nerves and the anxiety, and he thought, well, all right, for $3, it's almost foolish to pass that up. So he buys this insurance policy for $3, feels a little bit better, and so he decides he's going to grab something to eat quick. And you know, if you've been to an airport, they just have all sorts of food options anymore. And so he found his favorite food, Chinese. So he goes in, has this beautiful, relaxing meal of, I can just imagine, Kung Pao chicken and whatever else is good. I can't even think of a good one right now. That's going to bother me now. All right. So anyway, he had a really good, tasty Chinese meal. And at the end of the meal, he opens his fortune cookie. And in the fortune, he opens it up and he reads, your recent investment will pay big dividends. And so I don't know, you know, what his mindset was, obviously. He obviously is nervous and whatever and that kind of stuff. But this idea of anxiety and worry and, you know, doubt and all those kinds of things that we kind of roll together that we're going to look at this morning have a lot of different variances and nuances to them. And how we deal with them varies from person to person because we all feel better because of things that we do. And so this man, I don't know how, again, I imagine he felt a little bit better. Obviously, this is a made-up story anyway, but he felt a little better after buying the insurance policy, right? We feel a little bit better knowing that there's something to back us up or to support us or anything like that. And so I imagine that I assume that because of his response, right? Because we automatically assume that the fortune cookie is about that, whereas fortune cookies, we know, are just made-up general statements about life and that kind of stuff anyway. But he felt a little bit better after buying that insurance policy. And so what I want us to start with this morning, and I'm just going to pause for like 10 seconds, is think about what we do, what you do individually when there's anxiety or fear. Like if you were going to take this flight that was in the bad storm and that kind of stuff, what's your first response? And you don't have to shout it out, but I just want you to kind of think that and keep that in the back of your mind, okay? Because we all have anxiety and worry and doubt and fear, and what's our natural response? Don't give me the biblical response. Don't tell me what you're not going to tell me anyway. Don't think what I want you to think. Anyway, think what you normally would do. Okay, everybody got something? Okay, I'm going to assume you do. All right, so keep that in the back of your mind as we work through this, because really that's where we're at, I think, as a culture. I feel like we've gotten to a point where we see all of these things happening, going back, you know, months and months to riots and different things like that. We're taking that anxiety and that fear and that doubt that's inside of us, and we're expressing that in different ways. And we can look at, again, riots as part of that. We can look at the Capitol attacks a few weeks ago. We can look at attacks, maybe not the fair word, but the Capitol situation, circumstances, all the things that have happened over the last, you know, 9 months, but even obviously before that as well. That's where we're at. We're expressing our anxiety, our fear, and our doubt, and the things that we're dealing with in different ways. In fact, I think we've taken that to a step where a lot of times it's expressed just as anger and even hatred. But I think it all goes back to that, and it's all of these different circumstances, right? We can't just point to, you know, this choice, the government's choice, or this person's choice, or this situation. It's just all of this kind of the perfect storm. I was watching, this is completely off topic, but I want to share it anyway. I was watching one of the last Marvel movies, the Endgame, and I was thinking about, you know, someone has Thanos' glove and is snapping, you know, 2020 was their idea, and they snapped this, and no, you guys, okay, you guys don't watch it apparently, so that would have killed in a different audience. I'm going to assume anyway. All right. So, where are we at? So just this idea, again, of fear of anxiety, and we're just expressing that, I think, in our culture in different ways. And we're seeing that on the news. We're seeing that in different kinds of things. And it's not, again, just one thing. It's so many different factors being put into this together. And it can be from one extreme of someone has lost their business, someone has lost their livelihood, they're figuring out how to move forward in that, to the other extreme where we've just lost a sense of normalcy, right? We've had to do things a little bit differently, and maybe our lives haven't changed a whole lot, but now I've got to think about this, I got to make sure I can find a mask, you know, all these different, you know, and so wherever we're at on how much this has impacted our life, that fear and anxiety has bubbled up, I think, for all of us. And if nothing else, we probably have felt a loss of autonomy and maybe even a certain amount of where we have choice. And so that being said, I want you to kind of keep all of those things in mind, where you're at, how you deal with those kind of things, how we deal with those things. And I'm going to read a quote. This was requested from me because I posted this on Facebook after I reread it. I had to reword it for myself to make it make more sense, and so I'm going to break it down. But someone requested this. I thought, well, since it's out there, I'll read it, and we'll go from there. So this is a quote from an article called 8 Sins Christians Are Starting to Ignore. And this is the third one, Fear and Worry. She writes this. This is the author writing. I think it's a girl anyway. The author is writing, Jesus is very clear about worrying. He flat out tells us not to worry. Faith requires trust. 1 John 4:18 says, there's no fear in love, but perfect love drives out fear. God is love. He loved us enough to send his son to die to atone for our sins. His love is perfect. Therefore, we should have nothing to fear. She says, or the author says, I know fear is inevitable sometimes. It is a major struggle for me, but I would say that for myself as well. We are not perfect, but fear and worry are not a part of the equation with Christ. These attitudes that imply a lack of faith. All we can do is remember that God is sovereign and always in control. And overall, I really appreciate what the author here says and the mentality behind it. There's a few different nuances in that I would word differently myself. And so we're going to break this down just a little bit and just look at what is the Bible actually say about fear and worry and doubt and anxiety and those kinds of things. And the interesting thing, you know, the first part of this, the author's, you know, incredibly right. She says, I really hope it's a girl because I keep referring to it as her as a girl. So, says that Jesus flat out tells us not to worry. And not only specifically about certain, he has a significant list of things. And most of these, I think, are from Jesus. But from somewhere in the New Testament, these are all worries. Things that we're told specifically not to worry or fear. Hunger, thirst, nakedness, we'll read that in a second. Sickness, suffering, not to fear wicked people, and especially people that are, and even people that are going to be abusive to us, physically, emotionally, relationally, whatever kind of abuse we may experience. Don't be afraid or anxious about threats or hidden agendas. Don't be afraid of death. Ultimately, and we know that through Jesus, judgment and salvation, we'll talk more about that too. But ultimately, he says, don't be afraid of general storms in life as well. And if we look at this list, those are pretty much everything, all the things that I'm anxious and nervous and fear in life, right? I don't think there's anything that we can stick in there that doesn't fit into one of those categories. And Jesus specifically, I think, like I said, most of these are Jesus specifically saying, don't be afraid of these, or don't worry about these things, don't be anxious about these things. That being said, we're going to look at kind of the first two here in Matthew chapter 6. So you got your Bibles, Bible app, Matthew 6, 25 through 34. Again, Jesus is at towards the middle end of the Sermon on the Mount, giving this instruction. Very specific, very direct in a lot of ways, but also very metaphoric and poetic as well. He says, therefore, tying in the last section, and I'll talk about that in a minute, but therefore I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, what you will eat or what you will drink, nor about your body, what you will put on. Is not life more than food? And the body more than clothing. Look at the birds of the air. They neither sow or nor reap nor gather into barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not more value than they? And which of you by being anxious can add a single hour to his span of life? And why are you anxious about clothing? Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin, yet I tell you, even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass of the field, which today is alive and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, will he not much more clothe you, O you of little faith? Therefore do not be anxious, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? For the Gentiles seek after these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them. But seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all of these things will be added to you. Therefore do not be anxious about tomorrow, for tomorrow will be anxious for itself. Sufficient for the day is its own trouble. Right, we've all heard that before. We look for, you know, these words, and we've heard them before. We maybe repeat them to ourselves. We may even have a certain amount of this posted somewhere. If you're a post-it note person, this is oftentimes one that I think of when I think of I need to put post-it notes places to remember Bible verses. But the context of this, I think, is really interesting. Like I said, it's part of the Sermon on the Mount. But especially in chapter 6 of Matthew, where Jesus is talking, he's got a very specific focus. I mean, the whole Sermon on the Mount is focused on this, but it seems like he's specifically focused in chapter 6 about this idea of treasure. And in the first part of Matthew chapter 6, he's talking about storing up treasure and where is your treasure and those kind of things, focusing on the eternal treasure, right? Not a treasure that we have in our homes or at the bank or somewhere in a safe or something, but focusing on eternal treasure. And right before this section, you know, I highlighted that word therefore, right? Whenever there's a therefore in the Bible, it always points back to what was talked about before. Right before this section, Jesus tells them, you cannot serve both God and money. So the emphasis here, as far as worry goes, is underlined with this idea of how are we viewing our resources, especially from money, from things that we own, you know, or money, things that we can buy, and those kind of things, to things that we can buy, which are food and clothing and the other things that we need as well. And so Jesus has this mentality of we need to make sure we're focused on the right things, and emphasizes that anxiety, our worry, the things that we have, really oftentimes come because of where we're worried about in our treasure, where we're worried about our stuff, where we're worried about how we're going to get something that we need. And especially thinking about Jesus' context, I mean, for us, if we really, 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 you know, need, and, you know, not that I wouldn't do this anyway, but if, you know, we can go to one of the thrift stores, Goodwill, that's what they're called. You can go to Goodwill and you could buy a whole wardrobe of clothes for $100, right? I mean, last you all year long, kind of a thing, right? We have those things available to our culture, whereas in their culture, these things were so much more foundational, right? It was much more difficult, much more taxing to get the food that they needed daily, the water and the drink they needed and the clothes they needed. And so we got to think foundationally. Jesus is specifically talking about foundational things. Okay, and so for us, maybe that looks a little different. Maybe we don't worry as much about food, right, or clothing, those kind of things. We worry about other things more as foundational to our being. And so keep that in mind as well as we go through this. But at the same time, one of the dangers I think that comes from this is taking it too literally. And one of the neat things about Jesus that I just kind of put into my mind this morning, and it's not all that profound by any means, but he takes the right brain and says, or whatever side of the brain is the logical, rational. He takes that side and he speaks to it in direct kind of thing. But then he brings the other side of the brain and it says, no, these are some metaphors, images, hyperbole, things to kind of tie both sides of the brain together for us to have a holistic way of looking at life. And so in this section specifically, right, he gives specific commands. Don't worry, right? Do not be anxious about anything. But then he brings in those metaphors and those examples, the birds of the air, the lilies of the field, right? They don't do all of these things that we do in order to provide for ourselves, but yet God takes care of them, okay? And the reason, and one thing we need to step back from this, and I know this is probably not any of us, but we're going to throw it out there anyway just because it pops up occasionally. Sometimes we take this literally and say, okay, well, I'm not going to do anything, right? Well, if the birds don't have to toil or sow or reap, or the lilies don't have to toil and spin, well, I'm not doing anything, right? God will take care of me. I don't have to get up. I don't have to get in and do anything. I don't have to find a regular job. I don't have to do any all these kinds of things, right? And that's an easy, but a excuse we sometimes use and say, well, Jesus says not to worry, so I'm just not going to worry about it. I'm not even going to take care of anything, and God's going to like rain manna from heaven for us, which he has done, and so he can. But that's not the purpose of what Jesus is saying here, right? We need to assume the underlying Old Testament, and the Old Testament is always about we need to be a part of the community and take care of the things that we need to take care of. Finding regular work, continually being a part and supporting the community. The Old Testament assumes that all the time. In fact, you were kicked out of the community or stoned if you did not participate in the community and provide for yourself and the community, which I think is a really interesting punishment, but not saying we should bring it back specifically, but alluding to that. All right, so there also is, and just throw this out there too, you probably know this, but there's also the command that if your kids don't listen to you, you can stone them too, but I haven't threatened my kids with that yet. All right. There's only one teenager, though, so we may get there yet. So that in mind, right, the Old Testament, Jesus here is assuming everyone's going to participate and work for what they need, right? They're going to provide for their community, provide for their family, they're going to have consistent work, and also assuming that there's the wisdom that goes with that as well, right? A wise person coming to this text is not going to say, okay, I don't have to do anything, God's just going to rain manna from heaven and it'll be okay. The point of Jesus is, and that's really what we need to do when we read these texts, is step back and say, what's Jesus' point, right? What's his main point from this passage? And I think all of us can probably see and say, well, God says he's got this, right? God says he's got everything under control. And that may not be specifically every little detail, necessarily, right? Because what Jesus is talking about here is he's not talking about what we have right in front of us, right? The things that we can see and the things that we have and those kind of things. He's talking about a future heaven and a treasure that we can store up there. And so when we think about our context, that's always got to be our reminder. You know, God says he's got this. God says no. Continue to focus on the eternal, right? Because what happened yesterday, what happened over the last month, what happened over the last year, 10 years, what's going to happen in the next month, year, 10 years, that's all kind of moot. Because everything that matters is going to be taken care of, right? Basically, that's what God's saying. Jesus is saying, God's going to take care of the things that need to get taken care of. And that's the most important thing that we pull from this. And so when we do that, when we remember that, when we can step back from this idea of what worries us, because we all have anxiety and worry and fear, how are we going to focus on moving forward? And really, I think that's Jesus' whole point, is what are we going to do when we feel those emotions? What are we going to do to step into them? And in fact, Jesus takes us a step further when he talks about this in Matthew 10:28. He says, "Do not fear those that can kill the body, but cannot kill the soul. Rather, fear him who can destroy both soul and body in hell." And I think I've preached on this a while back, but I think, again, the most important thing we pull from this is not focusing on the physical, not worrying about the things that we have right in front of us, the things around us, but what is going to happen in the future? What is going to happen in our forever? What is going to happen in the eternal? And ultimately, I think what Jesus' point is once we change that focus and we continue to think of the forever, then the rest of the other things kind of get taken care of on their own, or we find a way to take care of them moving forward. And so again, I think this has come up the last several weeks, kind of by accident, but really, perspective and focus is all what this is about. And so I want you to imagine just for a second, if you're the first century audience here, right, listening to Jesus. And if you imagine, right, Jesus is talking about food and clothing, those kind of things. We don't worry about that as much, right? We worry about, well, my favorite brand of cereal isn't on the shelf, right? It doesn't have the right amount of marshmallows. And that's maybe that is me. So we throw a fit about that. We worry about that kind of stuff, right? No? I have a favorite brand of tea. That's an important one for me. If my green tea needs to taste a certain way, and it can't have like mango or peach or anything else in it. So that's my little thing. I shouldn't say that. That's not my only little thing. But we all have those, right? Right? You go to the store and you're like, they're out of your brand. You can't buy the other brand, so you just have to wait until your brand gets back, or you have to go to another store, right? That's our problem. I don't want to just stop at Aldi. I just want to stop at Aldi. I don't want to have to stop at Hy-Vee and Walmart and wherever else. So. All right, I've shared too much, I think. All right, so this morning, just thinking about ourselves as the first century audience, right? And if you think about how often and how much they had to put into their lives and into their world to just get the basic essentials, it changes, I think, how we view them, right? Because they weren't working eight-hour days. They didn't do the 9 to 5 and get everything taken care of, right? They were up at sunrise and went to bed at sunset, right? And they worked the whole day in between. Right, and that wasn't to get all these extra things, right? They weren't trying to pay for their internet and their cell phone, right, and their cable and all these extra things. They were just doing a whole day's worth of work to just get the basic essential things they needed in life. And so their worry about those things was probably significantly higher than our worry. But I also don't want to diminish where we're at, because what the things that we worry about and we stress about might be different than them, but that doesn't mean they're not significant and important. The emotion can be very similar, even if the circumstances are different. And I try to think of a good example, but I couldn't think of a real practical thing for myself. But like a four-year-old that worries and gets so emotionally distraught about a cat being in her room while she gets dressed, right? We think it's kind of silly, right? And a little frustrating, to be honest with you. But You know, maybe I worry more about, am I going to have enough, you know, money to make sure I have groceries? And I don't worry about that. But, you know, maybe we worry about the financial side of it. Am I going to have enough money to pay for this or that? Do I need this? And all those kinds of things. And we think, well, yeah, being able to put food on the table is more significant than having a cat in your room while you get dressed, right? But the emotion can be the same, right? In fact, she probably feels a stronger emotion than I do about some of this stuff. Don't tell her I said that. She's four, so I can use her for a while yet. And once she gets old enough to understand this, I can't as much. But the emotion's the same, right? And we may think it's silly and ridiculous and whatever, you know, just get over it. It's a cat and you're just getting dressed. But at the same time, the emotion's the same. And I think that's important for us to understand that we may have a different context, but the emotion can be very similar to what's going on. And our problems, we call them first world problems or whatever problems. Taylor Swift has a song called Champagne Problems. I don't think that's related, but ultimately, again, it's about perspective, but it's also about knowing that we're feeling things that are important to deal with and continue to think about as well. And so, yes, first century audience had a different perspective and we're worried about the basics, but whatever we're worried about is important as well. And so thinking about that and moving forward in this as well, is Jesus is asking us again, what is our focus? Are we focused on the things around us? Are we focused on things that are going to be temporary, things that aren't even going to last? Are we focused on things that are forever? And when Jesus is talking here, he's saying, no, this for right, especially Matthew 10:28 here, it's about the forever. Worry about the forever, what's going to happen in the forever. But he also goes on and reminds us, or he doesn't, but in Hebrews 13, we're reminded as well, that the Lord is my helper, so I will not fear. What can man do to me? Again, this perspective of even the things that are happening between us as people and relationships that we have, how are we moving forward? And knowing that, you know, God's going to take care of us in the long run, so what happens to me today, what happens to me in 5 years, what happens to me even over a lifetime, is small, is minuscule in comparison to what God has done for us and will do for us in forever. Which brings us to 1 John 4:18. The article mentioned this verse, and I think it's important for us to kind of glance at it here quickly this morning. And it says this. This is John writing. I love John's letters, but he says this in the 4th chapter. It says, there is no fear in love, but perfect love drives out or casts out fear. For fear has to do with punishment, and whoever fears has not been perfected in love. There's no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear. And the nature of this verse is sometimes we just feel feel like we fall short, right? Because with something like that, we think, well, I still have fear, right? I still have doubts. I still have anxiety. I still worry about a lot of things. So does that mean that I don't have love? Does that mean that God doesn't love me? Does that mean that perfect love isn't in our world? And that's the last one's the answer. Perfect love is not in this world. As good of a relationship that you may have with your spouse or someone else, a sibling or a parent, that is not perfect love. Does that sound depressing? Maybe. Sounds a little mean to me for some reason. But it's not. We're not going to see perfect love in this world, short of the closest we ever see is Jesus on the cross. To me, that is the closest, if not perfect love, closest we get to perfect love in this world. So we don't know what that looks like. And so first of all, we just need to realize that. We don't have perfect love in this world. None of us have experienced perfect love, no matter what the situation and circumstance. But I also want to point out this idea of punishment, right? In the context of what John is talking about here, he's not talking about the day-to-day kind of fears and worries and anxiety. He's talking about the holistic view of eternal fear and punishment. And so in the context of 1 John, especially chapter 4, he looks at this idea of what does that mean to look at the forever? Again, going back to the focus on the intention and those kind of things, when we are afraid of something, we tend to react differently than when we focus on what's good. And so when John's talking here, I think of myself as a parent, and I want my kids to do the right thing all the time. I want them to, you know, to react to people and situations, circumstances, always doing the right thing. But I want them to do the right thing for the right reason, too, right? I don't want them not to make fun of their siblings just because they're afraid I'm going to punish them, right? That is not what I want them to do. I want them to not call their siblings' name because they love them, which is really hard for them to do right now, I think. But So the punishment kind of works for now. But that's the idea, right? We want our kids, I think, our grandkids, those kind of things, to respond to people in certain ways or respond to circumstances, situations, not because they're going to get in trouble, right? Not because they're going to, there's punishment or something involved with that, but they're going to do it because it's the right thing to do, because they love the other person, because they love and respect those around them. And so that's what I think John is saying here. He's saying, don't focus on the negative. Don't focus on hell. Don't focus on, you know, just escaping the fires of hell. Focus on how wonderful heaven's going to be. Focus on how wonderful the love of God is. This perfect love should cast out any fear of hell and punishment therein. So that's this, that's, again, a focus idea. Don't focus on the negative. Focus on the positive. And so when perfect love steps in, when we finally do experience perfect love, we're not going to worry about the punishment. We're not going to worry about the negative. We're not going to worry about what's going on over here, because we're going to step into this perfect existence in this perfect world. And so when he's talking about that, he's meaning what is best for us and how do we move forward in that as well. And so with that, I want to kind of close with this idea. Just focusing and looking at this idea of fear and anxiety and doubt, the emotions that we experience, I think a huge part of that is that all of these that we looked at, from Hebrews to John to Jesus, looking at all of these kinds of things, I think is the most important part is our response to them. And we looked at when Jesus talked about it, he talked about faith, right? Oh, you of little faith when you have fear and anxiety. And that's kind of harsh too, right? Because we all experience fear and anxiety and doubt at times. So we wondered, is our faith lacking, right? Are we falling short? Do I just need more faith? And I would say yes and no. I'd say it depends on our definition of faith. If faith is just about what we believe and what we think and what we know to be true, then that's not what Jesus is talking about. He's not saying trust. He's not saying get more information and we're falling short in our knowledge. He's not saying we're falling short by having the emotions. What he's saying is, what are you going to do with them? And that's where faith steps in. It's faith is trust, is belief, and basically our belief in action. What are we doing with those things? Right? When we feel a sense of fear, if we're afraid of flying, and our response is, oh, I'm going to buy an insurance policy and I'll feel better, right? Is that faith put into action? Is that trust? If we step into the role of worrying about something and we try to alleviate in different ways, does that express faith and trust? An action way of living out what we truly believe. And so God, or Jesus, is telling us and reminding us here in John and 2 as well, is what are we doing with that? How are we expressing those emotions? And sometimes it's, you know, a substance. Sometimes it's bringing in these things that are outside of us to kind of make us feel better. You know, we have a huge opioid problem in our world, and that's part of this. You know, all these other kinds of drugs and different things we can put into our system to kind of numb it and push it away. And to me, is that, and you just always have to ask ourselves, is that trusting that God's going to take care of what's going to happen? How are we dealing with those emotions? Whether they seem like a simple little silly thing, what is my daughter doing about the cat being in her room, right? I just give her the cat and just you deal with it, right? That's probably not the best way, but, right, how do we deal with that? What are we doing to step into it? And that is where faith shows up. Do I have the faith to say, okay, God, you're going to take care of this? I'm not maybe going to do anything. I'm maybe not going to respond at all. Or maybe it's slowing down and stepping in. And I guess that's kind of the first idea, or really what Jesus says to us is really this first idea of going after him, right? A couple weeks ago, and I'm just going to throw this out there again. A couple weeks ago, we looked at love is patient, love is kind in 1 Corinthians 13. Well, that's kind of, okay, we'll come back to that in just a second. Is it loving, right? We asked the question, is it loving? Am I going to do something, say something, respond in a way, is it loving? Is it patient? Is it kind? Those kind of things. The question this morning is, it best for God's kingdom? Are we pursuing, that's what Jesus says, pursue, seek God's kingdom first and his righteousness. When we are anxious, when we are afraid, when we doubt, is our first response to say, okay, what does God's kingdom look like in that context? Am I going to do, and righteousness means doing the right thing, right? Am I going to do the right thing? What is, and not my right thing or your right thing, but God's right thing, right? Just make that clear, because that gets confusing in our culture lately. But God's right thing. And am I going to respond in faith by doing something that's best ultimately for God's kingdom? And if we ask those two, honestly, if we can ask those two questions, I think a lot of what we do will come out way better. At least I know for me it would be. So is it loving? Is it best for God's kingdom? Jesus again says, seek God's kingdom first. But I also think there's something real practical for us to do that I think has been really helpful for me is finding ways to just slow down. How can I just slow down, even in the middle of the day, even in the middle of a situation, how can I just slow things down and just say, okay, we're going to just take this step by step. Sabbath is an important commandment that we've kind of lost in our world of taking a whole day every week and taking a whole week every, I think every year, and then taking, you know, every so many years, taking a whole, you know, couple weeks or, you know, month or whatever, and just slowing down with the point of saying, okay, God, if you are truly on your throne, if you are truly king of our world, I need to just trust that you're going to provide in those things. And Sabbath is actually a great trust exercise, a great faith exercise. Because if you think about it and you said, okay, I'm going to take out a whole day of my week, do we have faith that everything is going to get taken care of that needs to get taken care of in a week? I struggled with that at first when I first started doing the Sabbath. Is everything going to get done? Is things going to get taken care of? And Sabbath is. It's a trust exercise and a faith exercise. And so those are, again, just really practical things for us to look at as far as dealing with these kind of things. But again, it's how we respond to those emotions. How do I respond to those anxieties and those fears and those doubts in my world? Am I going to buy insurance? Am I going to go chase after this? Am I going to try to fill it with a person? Am I going to try to do all these kinds of things? Or am I going to trust and slow down and be with God and say, okay, God, what's the good, right thing to do in this context? Just want to close with one final story. In the context of what can fear and anxiety do to us. And this gentleman named Sergey, I like the name. Sergey is going to be my next animal, I think, that I buy. Sergey. Which hopefully doesn't happen for a while. But Sergey was this Latvian prisoner. In fact, he actually only had like 10 months left after serving for 7 years in prison. And he decides at that point in time he's going to escape from prison. And he succeeds and he gets away and he's able to live a life. And he moves in with his girlfriend, finds a stable job and all of these kinds of things. And for 5 years, he's able to live free. But then finally, he gets to the point where he shocks police and prisoners and or prison officials and everything else when Sergey shows up to the minimum security facility and turns himself back in. And he says that even though he'd been out and living a life and those kind of things for 5 years, he says worry over being caught was too stressful. Worry over being caught was too stressful. And so he turned himself back in. What happens for us, and where Sergey's at, and I think we would probably all be kind of the same way, is that's really what happens when we allow fear and anxiety and doubt and those kind of things to just rest in our world and to kind of rumble in our world, in our lives, in our hearts, is we become prisoners to it. We become stuck in it. It becomes our whole focus. We're constantly looking over our shoulder, worrying about what's going to happen next or what happened in the past. And instead of being able to live, and we probably have all heard quotes about this, instead of being able to live in the present, worry ends up trapping us in a world that we don't want to live in. And Jesus is all about setting us free. Jesus is all about breaking free of those things. And so we need to find ways to be able to deal with life, to deal with these emotions, but we also need to be able to step into our world and live to bring His glory and His kingdom into this world as well. So that's my prayer. That's my prayer for us, is that we break free of those chains and break free of that worry and doubt and fear. Gracious Father, just thank you so much for what you provided for us. We thank you for the words that have been saved and stored in this text for us. We also are so thankful that you are you want to set us free, and that's free from habits and addictions and choices and physical turmoil, but it's also true for our emotional state as well, that you continue to lead and guide and direct us and provide for us the things that we need from you. And we just pray, Lord, that you set us free from those traps, helping us to step into your world and trust in you more and more. And we just pray that you lead and guide and direct us in that this week. In Jesus' name, amen. Worship team.